Well, do you have an exotic pet in your home? How'd you choose it? If you have an exotic pet, what's the most rewarding thing about it? Mike Hoffer, our guest today. It's been a long time since we've had Mike with us. I'm really glad to have him back. We're going to stick with fish and reptiles today because those are areas that he's really interested in fish. He's really interested in reptiles. And Tropic Life, his business started as Hoffer's Tropical Fish in 1972. It was kind of a part-time hobby business in a small store, 600-square-foot store. And now I think he had 25 display aquarias. Now I think he has 350 or something like that. It's now the second-largest independently-owned pet center in the United States. The reptile department by itself is larger than the average American pet shop, and there are over 160 individual habitats that he has there displaying. They have turtles, lizards, snakes, tarantulas from all over the world, all done in the high-quality museum and zoo method. So it's worth a visit over there just to see Hoffer's Tropical Fish. It's Tropic Life Pets in Milwaukee. That's the term for it. You have some questions or comments for him. I hope you'll join us. He's with me by phone today. But you can call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Mike Hoffer, welcome back to the program. It's great to have you with us again.
It sure is, Larry. Thank you for having me back. It has been a long time.
Yeah, you know, it's been so long. You know, and I was saying, you and your mom got into this business, wasn't it, back in the early 70s?
Well, she helped me out a lot, and so did my father. So it was a family business, and it continues to be. Now I have my granddaughter working here.
Oh, great.
Along with one of my daughters, and we're going to continue on with the family.
Well, that's wonderful. You personally specialize in fish and reptiles. What is it about those animals that fascinates you? And maybe you can talk about some personal favorites of each, too.
Other than being cold-blooded and totally dependent upon you, I really couldn't answer the fascination with that, but I've talked with people over the years, and we all seem to develop that love for either tropical fish or reptiles at an early age. Consider your little little boy, 8 years old, what he likes, and I just continued on with it, you know.
Well, it's wonderful. Let's talk a little maybe nuts and bolts here a bit. What do people need to take into consideration if they think they want to start an aquarium? Kind of, you know, equipment and maybe investment. Maybe what kind's the best species to start with? Well, three questions there, but
that's okay because I'm asked that every day. It's a complete life support system for whatever fish you choose. And research the fish and find out what their needs are as far as temperature, the type of water quality that they need. And then we go from there. But most fish require a filter, a heater possibly of some sorts, and as large a tank as possible, as large of an aquarium as possible.
Yeah, you want just a little aquarium or, you know, one of these little fish bowls doesn't really do it.
No. You know, I term them as a lot of people buy those for their goldfish, you know, their first fish. And I look at them as being the goldfish torture chamber.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. What about species? What's best to start with?
I would say like a 20-gallon or a 30-gallon aquarium or larger.
Mm-hmm.
Stay away from the small 5- and 10-gallon aquariums.
Yeah.
The main reason is that the parameters, the pollution, the temperatures can change so drastically and so quick. It produces a lot of stress on the fish. And that's probably the number one killer of fish.
Oh, change in temperature of the water?
Change in temperature of the water. okay. and a rise in the pollution levels, and that comes from under filtering the aquarium or overfeeding the aquarium, and that results in early death on the fish.
Yeah, what species of fish do you like to start with?
I like the little hardy zebra danios or the platies. They're colorful. They move around, provide some movement for, especially when you're doing this for kids or adults. They like to see the movement. I stress heavily on planting an aquarium and decorating it. Not necessarily in a natural form, but they can do plastic plants or live plants. And a few featured things like a piece of driftwood or a rock. But it gives the fish a more comfortable level to live in and be able to hide behind a plant if they imagine somebody coming after them, such as would happen in nature. But it's a pleasant thing to look at. And
it sure is.
I don't like it when people just put fish in an empty aquarium.
Yeah.
Little gravel and that's it. You know, you're stressing the fish out by that.
I'm wondering, this whole impact of the invasive species import bans, has that been a good thing?
No. A lot of it's unfounded. Hmm. They seem to be passing laws that are first unenforceable. And they're doing it for a good reason. They're trying not to change the ecology of our area, but they're sometimes not thinking it through enough. Some of these things would be here already, and they're putting a ban on more importation of them. And I realize people do let things go, such as the snakes down in the Everglades.
Yeah.
And it has become quite a problem. Or goldfish around here in ponds. They're using goldfish as fishing bait, which is totally illegal. It's also very illegal to let goldfish go when they get too big in your bowl or your aquarium, thinking that they're doing a good thing. It's having an impact on some of our lakes here. But now they're trying to ban the importation of certain fish that would not survive in our area. But because it's the general United States and there's nothing to govern interstate traffic of them, they have to ban it entirely. Fish that might get let go down in Florida would survive. But the same fish would not survive up here.
Yeah.
They have that problem. That's the number one thing that we've encountered in regulations in that. And it seems to be changing monthly.
Hmm. Well, we have Adam in Milwaukee has a question for you. Let's go to Adam. Hi, Adam. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi. How's it going, guys?
Good. Thanks.
I guess I'm going to give you a little bit of history about it real quick. About 7 years ago, I was in San Diego visiting some friends, going through Chinatown, and I purchased a tiny little red-eared slider about the size of a quarter for $5. More or less just bought it as a novelty more than anything, but he survived the trip with us back home, so I decided to keep him. Now, admittedly, I haven't done a lot of research in the last 6 or 7 years as far as total proper care of these things. I mean, I did do enough to make sure that he was happy and everything, but it seems like every November through February, he stopped eating completely. And this has gone, it's been like this every single year, and I would just assume that this is some kind of a light hibernation cycle, but I guess I just kind of wanted to make sure that I wasn't doing something wrong or if maybe he's sick with something. But, I mean, it seems pretty consistent November through February every single year.
A red-eared slider.
Okay. Yes, Mike. It's a very common problem.
What is a red-eared slider, for those who don't
know?
It's an aquatic
water turtle.
Yeah, an aquatic turtle. Okay.
They originated down in Louisiana, Florida, Mississippi and Alabama, and that's where they're commonly found. And if you can go back that far when you were a kid, I know when I was a kid, the dime stores were selling these little 50-cent size green turtles with a little red mark on the side of their heads, and we call them red-eared sliders.
Okay, so at least I've identified the species correctly.
Yeah. They do get quite large. The females do, maybe 10 to 12 inches in length. Males get about 8 inches.
From what I can tell, I believe I have a male. He's in a 30-gallon tank, probably about 7.5 inches long.
Okay. And a male will have longer claws in the front.
Okay.
What I had used as my main identifier to show that it was a male, that's kind of what I went off of.
Okay. The reason that he stops eating around that time can be governed by a couple of things. It could be temperature. It could be the length of daylight, like if you have him near a window, and all of a sudden he's receiving less and less daylight, he's equating that to winter, which he is correctly doing. And they know that winter brings on the cold, and they will stop eating because being ectothermic, and they need a higher temperature to digest their food, he will stop eating.
And we're going to continue that conversation. We can talk some more about red sliders and other reptiles and exotic pets with Mike Hoffer right after this quick look at the news. Stay with us. So happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking about choosing and caring for exotic pets today, zeroing in on fish and reptiles with our guest, Mike Hoffer. Mike Hoffer is the owner of Tropic Life Pets in Milwaukee. Great to have him along, and certainly I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments as we move along today. The number 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. We were talking about red-eared sliders, and the red-eared slider that our caller had would stop eating for a 2-3 month period. And Mike, you were saying that it could have been a light issue primarily that would cause the slider to quit eating.
Yes, Larry. Most likely it would be the lighting or temperatures or humidity, but we can rule out humidity on a water turtle. And it's a real common problem with snakes also.
Oh, interesting. Faye in Green Bay has a question for you. Hi, Faye.
Well, hello. Good to talk to you. I have a quick question about fish and a short story to tell you that is pretty entertaining. I was wondering, I've been told that fish only have a 4-second memory, and I'm wondering if that was true.
Do fish have a 4-second memory?
Yeah, because I've had a goldfish that seemed to recognize me when I'd walk by the tank, and I've always been told they don't have a very good memory, but I just question that.
You know what a good experiment for you to perform?
What?
Just lightly tap on one corner of the fish tank when you're feeding. And tap on the corner, feed the fish, and then every time you go up to the tank, feed the fish, tap on the corner, and then do that for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Now go over to the other corner. Tap on the corner and watch where your fish go.
Okay, I will try that. Actually, I don't have our fish anymore because this is the story I was going to tell you quick. We had a goldfish. We got him when he was real small. I had him in a small tank, but we were cleaning the tank. We put him in a goldfish bowl in the kitchen, and the power had gone out in our neighborhood, and somebody in my family had put a bread basket on top of the stove, and when the power went back on, the stove had been turned on, lit the bread basket on fire, went all the way up the cupboard, started everything on fire, and it blew up the fish tank, put the fire out. We came home just to smoke, and little Carl was flopping around in our Gen Air thing in our stove. He survived, and he has grown huge, and we actually donated him to Bellin Hospital because he grew a little bit too big for us to handle, but he's still alive.
Oh, wonderful.
He saved our house from fire.
The fish that put out the fire.
Yeah, we keep calling Carl the firefighting fish.
That's a wonderful story.
Yes.
Oh, thanks so much for calling, Faye. And I love that idea that you had, Mike, about tapping on the corner of the one edge of the fish tank and the feeding. Have you done that?
I did that for my final paper in biology in high school. And I even had the teacher amazed.
So what happened?
Well, the fish all went to the corner that I was feeding them at prior to that.
Uh-huh.
And they, for the life of them, they couldn't explain why they all went to the opposite end of the fish tank when I tapped.
That's a great story as well. Brian in Minocqua, we go to you next. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What can we do for you?
Okay, I'm calling about those underwater frogs. My daughter's got one of those underwater frogs that you can purchase.
Sure,
reasonable.
The Xenopus, yes.
Yeah, I don't know what they're called, but she's got a 5-gallon fish tank. She keeps it really clean. She's got plants in there. We feed this thing crickets, earthworms, crappie, minnows. It just eats anything.
Yeah.
And every now and then it has eggs. It eats all the eggs. But my question is, too, she's funny about dumping the water outside. She says that they carry diseases that can get into water systems. And another question, too, is we want to get rid of this thing, but it's really cool. It's kind of, it's fun. And we'd like to donate it back somewhere to maybe to your store or something.
Sure, we take donations like that.
Okay, this thing's about 3 inches or 4 inches long. It's big.
I was going to say by the size of the food it was eating, it has to be one of the larger ones.
Yeah.
Because there's also a dwarf variety that doesn't get more than an inch or so long.
Okay, yeah, this one's pretty vigorous.
Sounds like it. And you're treating her well and that she's laying eggs all the time. It's too bad we don't have a male for her.
Yeah. And, like, what about them carrying diseases and her being all paranoid about dumping out the water and getting into lakes around here?
It is possible, but I would say as long as you're not dumping it in the water system or down a toilet, if you're just doing it on the top of the ground, I don't think you have much to worry about.
Okay.
Well, she is dumping it in the toilet, but we have a septic.
Okay. I would think any bacteria that are living down in the septic system would negate that.
Yep.
Okay, and you do too take donations so we can bring this thing in.
Yes, we do.
All right.
Excellent, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling, appreciate it. I got an email from Ed who would like you to explain what we talk about zoo and museum method in your store, what that means for the habitats of the animals in the store.
Entails a lot of detail as far as the plantings go and making it look very well decorated. We do it both for our small animals also in the store, but we want to give them enough activity and places to hide. And we do that to make it look attractive as well as it's a function for the animal. And I was criticized many, many times for having fully planted aquarium, and we'd have to go and chase a fish out. And we use two nets, and they're just as easy to catch in a planted aquarium that looks nice and that they're comfortable in as if you were trying to catch a fish out of an empty aquarium where there's no plants. And I always tell the people, well, I'm in there for 2 minutes a day catching a fish.
Yeah.
The fish are in there 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And let's make them happy.
Yep, makes sense.
And if it takes us a few extra seconds to catch something, so be it. But that's my philosophy on displaying animals and fish as opposed to some of the superstores, maybe.
Yeah.
Making it easy for the employees to catch fish.
Gotcha. We have an email from Katrine in Madison. She has a betta with fungus. How do you treat that?
There's a product called Mellifix that will get rid of that bacteria. that's she's seeing a looks like a fungus growing on the fish, and we routinely use products like that just to keep that. They seem to be real highly susceptible to getting a bacteria that kind of whitens out their color and getting little white fuzzy things growing on them.
And an email from Becky, who's a veterinary student, she'd like to emphasize that people with exotic pets need to make sure that their pet or their vet specializes in exotics, since the issues are quite a bit different from the more common pets.
Yes, they are.
What's your opinion of adopting exotic pets from shelters and rescues?
I think it's a good thing because knowing quite a few of these shelters, we donate dog food and things like that to them to keep them stocked. They really don't like to deal with fish or snakes or turtles.
Yeah.
They're more geared to dealing with dogs and cats.
We have Greg in Janesville up next for you there. Greg, hi. Thank you for calling.
Great, thanks. Hey, my son has an ornamental box turtle and eats mealworms and it eats crickets, but nothing else. We try lettuce, apples, and it'd just be nice if we could get it to eat something other than mealworms and crickets.
Yes,
it
would.
I was wondering if you had any ideas.
Yeah. Check your temperatures, check the humidity levels in the cage, and, of course, your lighting. And I would highly stress a 6 to 8 point UVB fluorescent light over their aquarium or their cage, their enclosure. But spray mist them every day. And I would offer them as many different fresh fruits and vegetables. I would also, if all they're eating are crickets and mealworms, I believe, try to dust those feed items with a calcium food supplement that's geared for the animal you're feeding, in this case the box turtles. It's very essential to give them as much variety as possible.
Okay.
And also you mentioned lettuce, non-nutritional.
Yeah.
Try to feed them in the summer dandelion greens that haven't been sprayed, collard greens, mustard greens, kale, things like that are better nutritionally for a tortoise or a mm-hmm. turtle in this case. But try that. Uh-huh. Berries, all kinds of things. I have what I call a herd of rescued sulcata spur-thighed tortoises originally from Africa, from Somalia, and we feed them a large variety. We have 10 of them here, and they range anywhere from about 20 pounds to 95 pounds. And
they get a little of everything.
They get a lot, even melon rinds, pumpkin, that sort of thing. Experiment with the foods.
Okay, and the light, why the light? Does that help with their appetite? Or
it helps with the appetite. It helps with their general well-being. Just as though that same, it's duplicating the sun's UVB rays, and it's healthier for us. It's healthier for the animals.
There you go. Thanks, Greg, for calling. Peter in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Peter.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. Very interesting show. I have a question, please, about snapping turtles. I live near the Milwaukee River, and I see these people pick up the little babies once in a while, take them home, and they say they're going to keep them as pets. I just wonder what happens long term. They're supposed to overwinter to hibernate, and that must throw off their biological timetable.
Oh, there's been a lot of debate about that. And my opinion on that is that hibernation is a result of necessity. It's when the light, the daylight diminishes down below 12 hours per day, the temperatures drop. They need to, they have no source of food at that time, so they hibernate. In an artificial condition, in the home, they're not experiencing that. So they can go ahead and eat and function all through winter if you keep the water warm. Now, if you raise a baby snapper from baby, they're quite nice. They're not real mean turtles. They are when you find a large one out in the wild.
Yes.
Believe me.
But, if I could follow up question then,
I don't think there is anything wrong with that. Now, after they've been in captivity, do not release them back into the wild.
Okay, follow up then. Eventually, they do become big and ugly. Too big for any home aquarium, I would think. What would a person do at that point?
Find a nature center or a school that might want them.
Yeah.
But just don't release them.
Don't release them. They're probably going to
die. Get a larger aquarium for them. I found also that if you kind of meter out or limit their food, they're not going to get as large as they do out in the wild. Hmm. Because out in the wild, they're mainly scavengers. They come upon a dead fish, and they eat the whole thing, and they just continue growing, and they can get larger than a pizza pan.
Yeah. You know?
But in captivity, I found that most of them don't really exceed 10, 12 inches.
Okay.
In length now, you know.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Peter, for calling. Appreciate it. Bill in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Hello. About 8 years ago, I took over some abandoned pond goldfish. And I got a 75-gallon aquarium for them, and at the time there was about I don't know 9 fish I believe what there was, and over time I'm down to 4 fish now. It seems like over time, one by one, they've been dying of dropsy, and I haven't been able to find that there's any cure for it really. And the second question I have, I'll take my answers off the air, is how much light do goldfish want or need? The aquarium is down in a basement with some light, natural light coming in. But from what I've read somewhere that they don't like harsh fluorescent light like you often get in a tropical fish aquarium, for example. But I just wonder how much light they like or need. I'll take my answers off the air.
Well, I could give them on air, too. Goldfish like light. They intensify in color, especially with like our pond fish when they're outside. I mean, the oranges are more vibrant and the colors are just a lot better. So I'm assuming they like the light. I don't see any problems with too much light. Other than the length of light per day, I would say 12 to 16 hours a day is normal. Dropsy is an incurable virus, actually, but you can diminish that by using Epsom salt in the water and Maricin or erythromycin, which is available over the counter in an aquatic store.
All right, there we go. Let's go to Pat in Eau Claire. Hi, Pat.
Yeah, hi, Larry. Great show. Really enjoyable.
Thank you.
I have a question for your expert. We have a 30-gallon tropical tank, and we just have a Plecostomus and then some neons, and we've had our tank for a long time, and they're very healthy. And my question is, for Plecostomus, how long what's the typical lifespan of a fish like that? Or even the tropical fish. Ours is about 7 years old and very healthy, about 7 inches long. And I'm just curious, you know, what the life expectancy might be.
Well, I have good news for you. You're going to have that guy for another 25 years, easy.
Really? Wonderful.
Take good care of them. Neons would commonly last, I would say, 4 to 5 years.
Okay. Okay. And the question, you know, what is the ideal temperature for a tank? Probably a very basic question. And ours, you know, it's about 78 to 80 degrees, and they seem to do real well in that.
You're right on, 78.
Okay. And, like I say, a great show, and I enjoy listening to it.
All right. Thank you, Pat, for calling. And Greg in Menominee, Michigan, your turn. Hi, Greg.
Yes, Vass, and I agree with him. A great show. I really appreciate it. What I'm wondering about here is the fact that, like, you know, these external filters, yeah, like an Eheim, for example.
Sure.
And I'm wondering about, you know, once that thing is stabilized and the bacteria is growing and everything, you still, you know, you take it out and wash the, like, this is in a salt, so you take it out and you wash the media and so forth once in a while in salt water. But how long is that good for? I mean, I'm wondering how long before you would actually take the whole thing out, clean everything out again, and
start,
I know,
over.
You don't want to destroy the media.
No, is that filter in a saltwater aquarium?
Yes.
It is. Okay. So you're going to use some of your water,
right,
to rinse some of the media out.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's all you need to do.
That's it.
And how long will that last? I mean, will it indefinite?
Well, years. The worst thing to do is to change it, because what you're doing is you're eliminating the bacteria colonies, the nitrifying bacteria colonies that do the waste removal. By changing it out, you're starting new again. And the ability of the aquarium or of the filter to filter out waste is diminished greatly by doing that.
Okay.
So and by washing that with the salt water, you're not washing that away, because it is a fixed bacteria that lives on those surfaces. If you were to wash it with chlorinated water, however, from the sink, you're killing a lot of that bacteria with the chlorinated water.
Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, because there's like filter pads in there too, and once in a while you got to take them and get rid of them.
Yeah, occasionally you have to replace when they start falling apart.
But the rings and so forth, the ceramic rings and that, just
never.
Clean them once in a while with good salt water, right?
Just rinse them out a little bit,
yep.
Just to get some,
okay,
of the extra garbage out of there, that waste that builds up in there. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Greg, for calling. And let's see, we've got Kim in Black Earth. Kim, hi.
Hi, Larry. I really am enjoying this show, as everyone else is saying. And I wanted to ask, I've seen these little frogs inside what look like little plexiglass square boxes. And I just can't think, with a fishbowl being small, I just can't think how these, and there's no opening in them, how these frogs can have any kind of a good life. What is that all about? Do you know anything about that?
Yes, I do. And they're commonly sold at, like, educators shops and gift stores. And they actually will live for 4 to 5 years in those little boxes. But most of my customers that have purchased those from those stores usually come in and get a larger environment for them. It is, I think, better. But that is the dwarf variety of what the last gentleman came in, called in. He's got the larger 4-inch type.
Hmm. But yeah,
Xenopus, that's the African frog.
Does seem like kind of to have that small of an area.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, I don't think it doesn't sound good to me. Thank you, Kim, very much. And Mike, thank you so much. I went online to your website at Tropic Life Pets, and it's a great website. Thank you so much. Maybe we'll put that up on our Facebook page too, if people need to find it.
Oh, sure.
And I hope you'll join us again sometime.
Well, just call me anytime.
All right, thanks, Mike. Mike Hoffer, owner of Tropic Life Pets in Milwaukee. Great to have him along. We'll get him back and we'll do it again. Sorry we didn't get to everyone. Tomorrow it's another edition of Garden Talk. You'll want to tune in to talk with your experts about how to prevent, identify, and treat plant diseases. And then Monday, Rick Seney of FairCompare.com talks about plane travel. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.